Hello and welcome back to Terra, where today we have some pretty exciting news because a Primarch's return has been officially revealed. And it is none other than Perturabo, the Lord of Iron himself. Saying that Perturabo has returned is always one of those things that's a little bit kind of weird because, as we'll discuss today, he's always kind of been there. You know, he's never like given up on his hatred of the Imperium or his hatred of, well, most people. But it's good to know that he is actually clearly coming back in kind of a more central role within the narrative. And in particular, he has got some artwork released. This is the first official artwork of Demon Purty. And as you can see, it's a little bit dark, but it is like this is genuinely a fantastic thing to have because Demon Primarchs Perturabo, and to be honest, Demon Primarchs Lorgar as well, are two characters that we know bits about them, but there is so many details we've just never had. There is one description of Perturabo, which we'll talk about today, coming from a short story as a Demon Primarch. But because Demon Primarchs can change form and because the description is very vague, we never really knew what he'd look like. But now it looks like he is some sort of obliterator, god, monster. I mean, he just looks pretty cool. If you're an Iron Warriors fan, you'll be very excited. The reason this is coming up now and the reason he's not getting a model is because this is all going on apparently in the background of an upcoming campaign the Games Workshop is going to release. And this campaign is all set around the world of Cadia, or the world, the part of space where the world of Cadia once existed, at the very least. And as you can see, we've got a whole bunch of lore that is coming out in the near future. The Lord of Iron is sensible enough to stick to his strengths. So while Abaddon the Despoiler pursues his own wide-ranging plan to conquer the Imperium, the Iron Warriors will do what they do best, besiege it through grinding, brutal warfare. A good siege doesn't have to be confined to one planet, and slowly expanding the front line towards the heart of the Imperium is the goal, no matter how long it might take. An expanding ring of horrifically brutalist fortifications designed by Perturabo himself forges ahead. Entire worlds turned into keeps, their resources plundered to the last stone, so the Iron Warriors can raise walls that cross entire systems. Put simply, it's a classic Iron Warriors siege, but on an absurdly huge scale. Battle by battle, the infinite Citadel will creep towards Terra, leaving no foe behind that might disrupt plans. When significant resistance comes to stop them, they will simply dig in and claim the defender's advantage. Most importantly, the carnage and horrendous body count suffered in these pitiless battles serve to please the Dark Gods further, and soon the veil between real space and the Imperium will be thin enough that the Demon Primarch can finally walk upon Imperial soil again at will and drop the killing blow in person. This is a really interesting development for the character of Perturabo because the nature of his role within the Forces of Chaos has always been very kind of questionable. As I say, there are so many things that we know he has done over the last 10,000 years, but generally speaking, he has remained on the world of Medrengard within the Eye of Terror and kind of orchestrated stuff from there, or he has been taking part in the wars that make up the great game of the Chaos Gods. There's not been too many times he's actually been able to manifest completely within the galaxy because he is a demon and it requires a huge amount of power just to summon a being of that magnitude. However, now it looks like because the Great Rift splits the galaxy into two, now because the Imperium overlaps with reality so much, they're not only going to be able to summon Perturabo, but probably keep summoning him. And so he is just going to go on his own crusade and he's going to try and carve out as much of the galaxy as possible for himself, which is very exciting. It's also pretty notable that they immediately mention Abaddon the Despoiler because, of course, Abaddon and Perturabo, they're not on the same team exactly. They are broadly speaking aligned in their hatred of the Imperium, but the Black Legion and the Iron Warriors go about things very differently. And whilst the Iron Warriors have taken part in the Black Crusade, Perturabo is not known to regularly heed the call of Abaddon the Despoiler. But as a demon, Perturabo is unable to properly lead a conquest against Terra unless he accomplishes what he aims to, which is basically drown the Imperium in so much warp stuffs that he's able to manifest completely. One of the things that I didn't like I kind of feared with these sorts of Primarchs coming back, is you basically get a situation where every Demon Primarch returns with a plan to conquer the galaxy. And the reason that's not necessarily a good thing is because Chaos is often as much its own enemy as it is an allied force. And so the idea that you would have Fulgrim, who has determined to become the new Emperor of Mankind, apparently, and Perturabo and Mortarion and Magnus, everybody vying for the same goal, is basically going to play to the strengths of the Imperium of Man. And given that the Loyalist Primarchs, we would guess, will be, broadly speaking, aligned, it would just give the Loyalists too much of an advantage. So Perturabo taking on a stance like this, where he's not going straight for Terra, he's just going to be a real thorn in the side of the Loyalists that Abaddon can then use to his advantage, I think this is actually quite good. As to not seeing Fulgrim enough, to be fair, given that the Lion didn't get much presence in the narrative until Dawn of War comes out, I would be quietly confident they're going to do something similar with Fulgrim. I would even go so far as to say it might be the same thing. And I do wonder if Fulgrim will appear in Dawn of War 4 at some point, perhaps in an expansion, because we haven't seen too much of Fulgrim since, you know, his novel, really. And there's still so much they could really do with him. But I guess the problem with Fulgrim is that we've sort of already seen him fight Gilliman before, so that would already be a bit of a repeat. It would be exciting, but perhaps they're looking to do something kind of more new. Perturabo, on the other hand, doesn't really have that relationship with Gilliman. Like, we know, of course, that like the Ultramarines and the Iron Warriors often come to blows in the Uriel Ventress series, but the I guess, to be fair, Perturabo has a bit of a history with the Lion, but at the same time, Fulgrim, yeah, I guess he's more of a one-dimensional character, I guess, isn't he? I think that Loyalist Fulgrim early in the Heresy is one of those very kind of complex characters that I can understand why people really root for. But once he's a Demon Primarch, he's much more just about him, you know, taking as much power as possible, fucking with his sons, doing whatever he can to kind of claim more and more skulls, or, well, probably the wrong word, more and more sensation and what's the word I'm looking for? Pleasure in the name of Slaanesh. So Perturabo is kind of a more interesting... Perturabo is definitely a Primarch that you can do more with, I guess, is what I'm saying. And probably, he's probably the character that you can, of the Demon Primarchs, that you can do the most with, in my opinion. Because Magnus is basically too powerful. Anytime you involve Magnus in any story, you have to nerf him because he's just too strong. Like, as a sorcerer of that incredible power, just no Loyalist Primarch without the aid of like Sisters of Silence or the Emperor is going to be able to stand up to him. Mortarion is always going to be brought down by like Typhus or Nurgle. He's going to suffer in some way, and he's just a very grumpy bastard. And then Fulgrim, of course, is like, he does want to become the Emperor of Mankind, but that threat, that ambition rings kind of hollow for me. I don't think Fulgrim is really going to make much of an attempt to actually accomplish this. Angron is, of course, a mad dog, and Lorgar is just going to be out there, and he's going to try and, I guess, raise more Chaos Cults in the name of the Dark Gods. Maybe he'll stand opposite to the Star Child or something crazy down the line. But Perturabo is one of the characters that's, of the Demon Primarchs, is one of the most interesting, because he is just, he's just a legit asset. He's got one of the smartest minds, maybe the smartest mind out of all of the Primarchs by this point in time. He is able to regularly create shit for Abaddon the Despoiler and the Forces of Chaos in terms of things like demon engines and technologies. And the Iron Warriors lore, the little lore we have on Perturabo, kind of implies that Perturabo has been behind more than you might suspect. So there's a short story where Perturabo speaks to the Honzo Halfbreed, who's an Iron Warrior Imperial Fist Chimeric Space Marine who's created in the Angel Exterminatus book at the end. And he speaks to this Iron Warrior, basically, Warsmith. And when he does that, he kind of implies that he knows that Cadia is going to be destroyed. And he knows that all of this stuff has been going on for a long time. And a lot of it may be by his own design. So it's a pretty exciting time, I think, really, for them. Anyway, so Let me, yes, I've got a few recordings I want to play, so I'll go into them first before I answer some more questions. I think one of the big questions people are going to have when it comes to Demon Primarch Perturabo is he a Demon Primarch, interestingly, and why would he become a Demon Primarch? The first question comes, I think, a lot from misunderstanding or Reddit misinformation, YouTube misinformation. The truth is, Perturabo has always been a Demon Primarch. He has always been referred to as a Demon Primarch in pretty much every single Chaos Space Marine Codex. It's been incredibly consistent, and he has even appeared as a Demon Primarch in a short story. So whilst he doesn't take center stage very often, it's been pretty consistent across 40K's history, or at least most of 40K's history, since the Primarchs were created. As to the second question, that's a much more interesting question, because a lot of people like to point to the fact that during the Horus Heresy, he was not a fan of the decisions Horus Lupercal was making. So during the Horus Heresy, as the Heresy goes on, and especially as the Siege goes on, Horus becomes and appears more and more insane. And that's because Horus was playing a very, very long game that Perturabo didn't understand. But it, of course, appeared to Perturabo and others that what was happening is Horus had taken these bargains, this power from these Dark Gods, and he was just being utilized as their puppet. And so a lot of people saw that and therefore went, well, then why would Perturabo, having seen this, and this is a pretty big deal in the Siege of Terror, why would he then follow on from that and become a Demon Primarch himself? Because he has to seek ascendancy. He has to essentially sacrifice a lot of Imperial Fist gene seed in order to achieve ascendancy himself. So why would he even want this if he knows that there's a massive downside? But fascinatingly, during the Siege of Terror, Perturabo, right at the end, does have a pretty big switch in his mentality. And whilst he is not in this passage talking specifically about the idea of him becoming a Demon Primarch, he is definitely talking about the idea of him becoming a weapon.
Perturabo is a weapon, the greatest ever born. His father used him as a weapon, time and time again, which suited Perturabo perfectly well. But his father never thought to show appreciation. He just kept using. One does not thank a sword, of course not. But Perturabo was also, unfortunately, a son. A son with a feeling soul. He never asked for a soul, or that tie of blood, and would have been happy to have never known them. But there you go. A sword with a soul would learn to hate its owner if its edge was never sharpened or the blood was never wiped from it. Hating his father became easy, eventually. Eventually, it was a natural state. It became his hard edge, self-sharpening. Then his brother came along, with a hate all of his own, and the rest seemed so straightforward. Hate ebbs. Horus. Born from the first to greatness and favor. Likeable. No, more than that. Irresistible. They seemed to have so much in common. But Horus was always more of a dress sword than a working blade. Things began well. Events unfolded that Perturabo was eminently suited for. Promises were made. A bright future was negotiated. A configuration of the human Imperium better befitting a son like Perturabo. But slowly, he was used by Horus as he had been used by his father. He was left to achieve the near impossible, and rebuked when the near impossible was as slow to achieve as the near impossible always is. And Horus left him to it. The dress sword remained in its gaudy, ornamental scabbard. So did any appreciation. That was bad enough, but bearable. Then, the promises broke as easily as a chair's headrest or a patch of wall. Supremacy was always his goal. His supremacy. The future that would allow for it was not the configuration that Horus had shown to Perturabo to entice him. It was an atrocity that would burn down the great aspects of the Imperium, along with the rot that needed to be excised. It was a waste, and it was also a surrender. A surrender to forces that had no place in human affairs. Perturabo does not surrender. Horus's idea of victory was not a victory at all. Whether Perturabo took the palace or not, it was not a victory that the Lord of Iron could cost out. It was an unviable position, a victory he calculated to be impossible. He studies the data scrupulously, and it never lies to him. Having learned to hate Horus as much as he hated his father, Perturabo resolved he would not waste a single further soul on the effort. There was nothing to be gained. Perturabo double-checked the calculations and quit the field an hour later. Logic says the Lord of Iron can go back. Horus is about to triumph. That's what the data says. Damn Horus to hell. That's what hate says. That's what the Lord of Iron screams at the wall as he dents it, and yells at the deck as he cracks it, and howls at the chair as he reduces it to debris. Don't go back. Don't ever go back. He hates you. He will not forgive. He will not find mercy in his heart. His configuration of the future, now dawning, does not allow for mercy. Horus will punish you, whether you go back or not. He will hunt you, and he will destroy you. He will kill you and every single one of your sons. And if that's going to happen anyway, why go back at all? The Lord of Iron sits on the deck, hunched over, and watches the data talk in calm blue twilight tones. It never lies to him. He watches it tell the story of the War Master's triumph, the victory of Horus, scrolling past one data block at a time. Damn him. Hate him. He used the Lord of Iron as a weapon, but he made the Lord of Iron his enemy. Perturabo will just have to make ready and face him when he comes. Perturabo will simply have to kill Horus and all his sons and every single one of the idiots who cheer the name Lupercal, because they're too afraid not to. Every single one. Hate can do that. The Lord of Iron can do that. Especially if he has become something more by then. Something pure and perfect, because it is absolute and unique. Hyper-compressed meaning in solid form. The shadow cast by all weapons. There are ways to achieve this state. The data has shown it to him as an irrefutable outcome. He just has to decide if he can bear to. For all great accomplishments come at a price. It will take persistence. He's never lacked that.
The end of the Horus Heresy, we have Perturabo kind of panicking a little bit because he has abandoned the Siege of Terra. Perturabo has grown increasingly annoyed for a long time as Horus has kind of kept him at arm's distance and kind of just allowed him to run the show and seemingly done nothing, according, you know, from what Perturabo can see. And in particular, Horus Lupercal has kind of behind the scenes allowed and orchestrated stuff so that Perturabo committed to the Saturnine Gambit, which was an attempt to end the siege very quickly. That ended in quite a decisive Imperial victory, which really kind of annoyed Perturabo and embarrassed Abaddon, and it was a whole shenanigan. And after this, when Perturabo kind of goes to Horus and he's almost apologetic, Horus reveals that he's sort of known what's been going on the entire time, and eventually Perturabo just leaves the siege. He just abandons the Siege of Terra entirely, and Horus doesn't even follow him because by that point, Horus knows he's done enough to win the Siege of Terra. And so Perturabo has left, and that's where we get that passage where he's talking about how he's kind of panicked. He's a bit worried that Horus is going to chase him down, because Horus has become, kind of quite objectively, the most powerful being that we've ever seen in Warhammer 40k. But he interestingly thinks he might have a solution there. He thinks he can kind of forge himself into a perfect weapon, a weapon that might be able to even defeat Horus, if we're sort of reading between the lines there, at the very least, protect him from Horus, the most powerful person. So what Perturabo is intending to do is turn himself into something of, you know, monstrous proportions. Whether he's successful in that endeavor, we don't know. So as the scouring has now started, Perturabo makes an appearance very early on in the first book, Ashes of the Imperium. We have now seen Perturabo is playing a game where he is now trying to restart the forces of chaos, as they've kind of they need to be turned off and on again post the Emperor's kind of decisive blow to them at the end of the Horus Heresy. And thereafter, he's probably going to try and turn himself into this weapon and ascend to demonhood. And that's kind of where I have to be very careful how I phrase this, because the old lore around Perturabo's ascendancy comes from something called the Iron Cage Incident, which will almost certainly be covered in The Scouring, but the old lore on it is quite old at this point. It comes from what we call the Index Astartes of 5th edition. Essentially, what that means is this lore is like 15 years old, and it hasn't really been repeated in any Imperial Fist books, Iron Warriors books, or novels or background books to any notable degree since then. And for example, Perturabo lays this trap for Rogel Dorn. Rogel Dorn takes the bait. He tries to, you know, dig Perturabo out of his hole. That's what he says he wants to do. And basically the Imperial Fists get caught in this iron cage where they just get cut down, and the Imperial Fists only survive because the Ultramarines come and bail them out in the end. And Perturabo takes 400 gene seeds of the Imperial Fists, sacrifices them, and gains demonhood. But there's a couple of problems with that. In the context of Mon Warhammer 40k and the Horus Heresy, 400 Imperial Fists is just, quite frankly, not a lot of Imperial Fists. So there's definitely some things we're going to have to see being updated. But we can be pretty confident the Iron Cage is still going to stick around. I don't think it's going to be entirely retconned. But I would just be prepared for that to be tweaked, changed, retconned a little bit here and there. But yeah, it's still... it will still probably play out, broadly speaking, the same way. Anyway, so since that point, Perturabo and the Iron Warriors, they basically fall back into the Eye of Terror. They claim this planet called Medrengard, and on the world of Medrengard, they occasionally strike against the Imperium. Occasionally, Perturabo has been able to manifest properly, or at least strike out from Medrengard in a meaningful capacity. He even utilizes his new demonic gifts in one of the Chaos Space Marine Codexes. It talks about him using the powers of Nurgle to bring down a Forge World of the Mechanicus. So Perturabo's definitely been there, and he's definitely been attacking the Imperium. But most of what he's been doing, and it seems Games Workshop are sort of leading into this, is that Perturabo has been a bit of a mastermind this whole time. And I think that is backed up by a lot of like modern Iron Warriors lore, because in Iron Warriors novels, they're one of the legions that do sort of worship their Primarch. Some of the traitor Marines, of course, hate their Primarch by this point, but the Iron Warriors are not one of them. They actually think that Perturabo kind of saved them from the yoke of the Emperor. They think that he is, you know, their salvation, and so they're very happy to continue serving him, despite the fact that he is a pretty brutal commander. There is one passage in a novel, it's a short story called Halfbreed, where we do get to see actually sort of what Perturabo does look like as a demon Primarch, and we can kind of see where it does sort of match the new artwork, even if it is very vague. But I think it's worth listening to because, yeah, this is basically the only description we have of him.
Even before his elevation to demonhood, the Primarch had been colossal, but now he was a giant plated in silver and steel, encased in armor that was more a fortified sarcophagus than anything wrought for a living being, edged in yellow and black, scarred from 10,000 wars, and seamed with weld lines like scars. It was known as the Logos, its textures strangely alive, like a skin of metal and flesh combined. Perturabo, the Lord of Iron, himself. He went without helm, his head a nightmare of pallid dead flesh and bleached of colour, like a corpse dragged from an ocean trench. Thick cords of ribbed cabling pierced his skull, running back across his scalp in hissing cornrows. Eyes that were gimlet black, yet lit from within by the coldest light, stared out from a face that had known only bitter disappointment and had been cursed by inevitable betrayal. His mighty hammer Forgebreaker had been crafted by another, but had changed so profoundly from its original appearance that even had its original maker been alive to see it, he would no longer recognize the craft as his own.
In recent 40k, we have this situation where Vashtor the Archiphane has risen and become one of the most prominent characters in the set. He, as we know, has formed an alliance with Abaddon the Despoiler, the War Master of Chaos. Now, the reason this is really interesting is because whilst they have very different backgrounds, of course, Perturabo was a Primarch and Vashtor is just Warpspawn, at the end of the day, they fulfill some relatively similar roles, and there's a lot of crossover to the level that I suspect there might be little bits of retcons, a little bits of clarifications needed in the future. In particular, the origins of a lot of the demon engines that we know and love in the setting. So originally, Perturabo's lore did have this interaction with Abaddon after Abaddon became Warmaster, where Abaddon was gifted various demon engine technologies by Perturabo so he could use them in the Black Crusade, and ultimately the Iron Warriors did aid the Black Legion during the 13th Black Crusade. So we do know that like that was what Perturabo was originally doing, but now a lot of that territory has been handed over to Vashtor, and Vashtor, having been the weaponsmith of the Chaos Gods, is responsible for creating a lot of this demon engine technology. So I'm interested to see whether this gets expanded upon, and whether there's some clarifications, or perhaps they work together, or perhaps they could do some sort of chaos shenanigans where a lot of Perturabo's creations, as it were secretly guided by Vashtor. The Arcs of Omen campaign does clarify that Vashtor and Perturabo have been allies in the past. They have worked together, and that is important because, of course, they are both the Forge Masters of Chaos. So together, they can make something absolutely, just monstrous. A lot of people theorized when Vashtor, got this revelation that he wanted to become the fifth Chaos God, that perhaps Perturabo might even be his Demon Primarch or something like that. Whilst I don't think that is the case, I think they're in the long run going to fulfill very different roles. So Vashtor is going to become this character who allies with Abaddon the Despoiler, and he basically is he's going to become the backbone of the Black Legion, basically, because if you have a look at Vashtor's kind of color scheme, it's much more in line, not with the Black Legion, but what we might expect some of the Dark Mechanicum forces to have today. This does match one of the original Dark Mechanicum schemes, and I suspect that's basically going to be his role in the future, just kind of like the head of the Dark Mechanicum, and just as the Mechanicus is fundamental to the Imperium's progression in the future, the Dark Mechanicum has the same impact on the forces of Chaos. Whereas Perturabo, of course, is making his big play. He's creating his Grand Citadel and he's pushing that out, and ultimately it's going to allow Perturabo to manifest continuously, I would guess, or maybe an Angron type deal where every time Angron's killed, he can manifest again in 8 weeks, 8 days, 8 hours. The Iron Warriors will be able to bring Perturabo back every, so long as they can just keep killing Imperial Fists, basically, which is pretty exciting. Like I mentioned at the start of the stream, Perturabo has kind of just always been there, and whilst he hasn't always been able to manifest, even against the other Demon Primarchs, we do know that he has come to blows in the past. A lot of this is stuff that happens off screen, so we don't really know the details of how all the stories of the Great Game play out. The Great Game is the context of all of the Chaos Gods also hate each other, and they're constantly vying for supremacy, and if any of them grow in power or get too powerful, they turn on each other, try to bring them down. And Perturabo, as we saw in that passage earlier, Perturabo's getting stuck in these fights just for fun, just because it makes him more powerful, it makes his soldiers, his legion, more powerful, so he's just getting involved in the Great Game purely for the love of it. And whilst we don't see the Primarchs fighting very much within the Eye of Terror, there is actually one instance where we do see this happen, and it's between Perturabo and Mortarion, the Primarch of the Death Guard. And I've talked about this before on the channel, but I wanted to play it again because I really like this little bit of lore. It's not only one of the few instances of lore kind of diving deeply into what Perturabo is doing in like modern 40k, but it's also, like I say, one of these few instances where we see demon primarchs fighting each other. And presumably this has happened many, many times. Magnus, Angron, Mortarion, they're always fighting one another. And so this is a really interesting little bit of lore to get. And enjoy.
The War of Rust and Ruin. It is shortly after the creation of the Great Rift and a vast Death Guard force, led by Mortarion himself, advances through the pyroclastic stormfronts on the planet of Dysactis in search of the Temple of Ascension. They are met amidst the crackling maelstrom by an enormous force of Iron Warriors, supported by corrupt god machines from the Legio Abhorrax. Continent-shattering battle ensues. Hordes of demons are summoned from the beyond to join the fight, and beneath the gaze of the planet's cycloneed statues, Mortarion and Perturabo engage in a spectacular duel that lasts for 7 hours. It is a battle reminiscent of the incredible conflicts of the Horus Heresy, and Perturabo's sons cause terrible damage to the Death Guard force. Yet the longer the fighting rages, the more the contagions and metallophage poxes of the Death Guard spread through the Iron Warriors' ranks. Ancient heretics sicken and collapse, malevolent war engines seize with rust and shudder, sparking to a halt. Machine spirits go mad with revulsion and pain, and as the powers of entropy and decay run rampant, the battle swings in Mortarion's favor. With his forces in tatters and many of his precious war engines crippled beyond repair, even bitter Perturabo is finally forced to concede defeat. Falling back to pre-prepared defense lines, he detonates a series of explosive trenches amidst the raging storms and disengages in the ensuing mayhem. Badly mauled but triumphant, Mortarion and his Death Guard lay claim to the heathen temple they fought so hard for, and the ancient secrets that lie within are his.
So, Perturabo fighting against another traitor Primarch there, and it was notable that he lost, really, I think, because I would typically imagine Perturabo to be one of the most powerful of the demon Primarchs. Being a champion of Chaos Undivided typically is a big deal, and Perturabo has blessings from, you know, all four Chaos Gods. But Mortarion does win the day. I should say that is from the Death Guard Codex, so it's definitely going to be biased, but it seems pretty likely that it's true, and Mortarion at least achieved the Temple of Ascension, got access to all the goodness that's inside. We don't know what that means. This is kind of Codex lore, so it doesn't necessarily have too much of an implication for the setting, but it does mean that it's good to have that affirmation that the traitor Primarchs are often against each other, and there is only so many resources with in the Eye of Terror, which they are going to fight over. So pretty exciting little piece of lore there. But that covers most of what Perturabo has been doing, really, in the setting. We do know that he had a campaign to kind of destroy most of the fortified worlds in Segmentum Obscurius. We do know that, like all of the traitor Primarchs, he responded badly to the news that Rebute Gilliman had returned to the galaxy, and that has likely stirred on and pushed on his return to the setting. I will be really interested to see whether, you know, how I'll be interested to see how far they lean into this idea that Perturabo has been a mastermind of a lot of what's gone on in recent 40k, because they definitely could do that, and that would make sense for someone so smart. But then they could be like crazy with it, and they could even say, oh well, maybe Perturabo knew or even banked on the revival of Rebute Gilliman. So, you know, they could really go kind of crazy with this lore, which I think would be a lot of fun. And I think I think we want to see something really cool. I think that this lore around this Infinite Citadel is pretty exciting, but Perturabo has been quieter than you would like, I think, for most of 40k's history. Most of the demon Primarchs, after they ascend to demonhood, they either lose interest in the Imperium of Man, they just kind of sit on their planets congratulating themselves on their victors and victories. But Perturabo himself, he seems to, according to the lore, been planning something, and I kind of hope for something more than just the Infinite Citadel. But we'll see. Some super chats. Ardia, could Perty technically fix the Golden Throne? I think he's definitely up there as one of the Primarchs more technically gifted. That is less of a focus of his skill set in the books. It's more so his dominance of a Siege Master. One of the more famous passages from the lore comes from his interactions with Rogal Dorn. I've got pretty far into the stream without focusing too much on Rogal Dorn, really. And the reason for that is because Perturabo and Rogal Dorn are two Primarchs that are often mentioned in the same sentence. Rogal Dorn is very similar to Perturabo, but got a lot more preferable treatment. So during the Siege of Terror, during the Great Crusade, back when Perturabo was a loyalist, he was a pretty staunch loyalist and very loyal to the Emperor's cause and ideals. But he got some really kind of tough jobs, and Perturabo wasn't favored like Dorn was favored. So Rogal Dorn was requested to become the Praetorian of Terror and kind of reinforce the homeworld. And in addition to that, we see, for example, the Iron Warriors getting these really like horrible horrible campaigns where they fight against Xenos. There's one Xenos campaign they're involved in where the Xenos are able to utilize their powers to slow down time, and that forces the Iron Warriors to age very drastically during the battle. And so they fight some pretty horrific wars of attrition, which is basically what they were designed to do. And Perturabo isn't really liked by many people because he is a very harsh leader. So when he takes command of the Iron Warriors, he quite famously subjects the Legion to decimation, not because the Iron Warriors are like necessarily the worst Legion or even close to it, but because they should be the best and they're not good enough. And so he has, it's like Roman Roman history. What's very long for? It's from like Roman. It's the type of decimation you had in Roman times, where like 9 warriors have to beat the 10th to death. Pretty horrific form of decimation and punishment. And likewise, he would later on enact the same punishment upon his homeworld of Olympia, which we see in his Primarch novel, after the homeworld rebels against the Imperium. And not only that, he like nukes a planet, he kills his own sister. He nukes a city on the planet, he kills his own sister, he orchestrates like a meeting with the leaders of the rebellion, and then he just kind of kills them all and sends their heads back. He is not open for negotiation. He is a pretty brutal man. But anyhow, Nathaniel, member for 25 months. Thank you so much, man. Thanks so much to everybody who supports the channel. Really means the world. I can see a lot of love for Rogue Dawn in this chat. Interesting. I honestly, because it was entitled a Perturabo video, I assumed Perturabo would be crushing Rogue Dawn in this poll. But no, Dawn's doing pretty well. Anyway, where was I? Actually, let's do some questions because I've been talking for a long time and chat has been pretty lively. Welcome everybody. Okay. Sandman going live at the same time as Law Crimes guys to see who draws the bigger crowd. And I promise that's not the intention. I'm trying to stream every week, Wednesday and Sundays. So yes, I have like an official schedule now, which I'm trying to stick to. Occasionally I'll miss the odd one if I'm trying to get like a video out or something. But yes, I'm really trying to stick to that at the moment. Just to kind of, make sure it's regular. If we ever get an end game for 40k, they should make Perturabo and his slow, steady siegecraft the first to reach Terra. It would be interesting. I mean, one aspect of Perturabo's return, which might get an expansion, is his relationship with Lionel Johnson. So in the story Fallen Angels, that story takes place relatively early on into the Horus Heresy, and it covers the Dark Angels going to, basically the Lion is trying to guess what Horus Lupercalis wants in the future, and he kind of does guess correctly. And so he thinks, well, if for some reason, who knows why, Horus isn't killed on Istvan 5, then his next play will probably be to move towards taking Terra. He has to take Terra, and so the Lion takes the Dark Angels to a forge world to recover these siege engines that Horus had commissioned. And the Dark Angels are successful, but at the end of the book, there's a very quick meeting where Lionel Johnson runs in to Perturabo. And Perturabo at this point hasn't been revealed as a traitor, and the Lion hands those siege engines over to Perturabo. And they are specifically mentioned as having been used during the Siege of Terra by the traitors. And in addition to that, the Lion, we know, feels bad about it, because when the Lionel Johnson returned, he fights against this demon type thing. We don't really know exactly what it was. This kind of warp creature that takes on the form of all of the Primarchs. And when it takes on the form of Perturabo, it uses this guilt against the Lion and says, if you'd been more astute, then you would have seen this betrayal coming. And whilst I think it's a bit too harsh to hold this over the Lion's head too much, because we're Lion simps on this channel, but more importantly because it's at that point in the Horus Heresy where even the Emperor hadn't foreseen Perturabo being a traitor, so I don't hold this against the Lion too much. But at the end of the day, it does come, it's a stark reminder of the sheer arrogance of Lionel Johnson, because when the Lion meets Perturabo in that scene, The Lion is basically just there trying to get support from Perturabo for his inevitable bid to become the next War Master once Horus has been dealt with. And so it would be good to bring this up again in 40K, because it would kind of play to the Lion storyline of him being a more humble character now, but also it would be good for Perturabo to have something to rub in his traitorous loyalist, Freudian slip there, in his loyalist brother's face. So it would, I think you'll probably get a Lionel Johnson Perturabo fight at some point. As I mentioned earlier, like, you know, Uriel Ventress and Hon Zhao have often been opposite each other in the books, but at the same time, Perturabo and Gilliman don't have a massive history of a relationship, so I think you're more likely going to get Gilliman, but we'll see. Either would be good. And the other option, of course, is that we get another Loyalist Primarch. We don't know exactly when this Demon Purty model is going to come. They are directly leading into a Demon Purty model being released, because as the article says, this is all about the Iron Warriors gathering enough planets, gathering enough power so that Perturabo can manifest properly within the galaxy. So it's definitely coming. But probably about halfway through next edition, I would guess. However, around that time, we are also due, I'm going off the Lion Gilliman timeline here, we are due another Loyalist Primarch. And I'm still banking on Jagatai Khan. I'm still a Khan fan. But I do think that, of course, Rogue Dawn versus Perturabo is always going to be a huge draw. I kind of suspect they'll want to write the Iron Cage lore first, and you can always just build up to Rogue Dawn's return by delaying it. But objectively, that would be a big plot line for the setting, and I think people would really enjoy it. So yeah, it's a pretty exciting thing, and pretty exciting times. Jagatai Khan versus Perturabo would also be completely epic. It'll be good to see the Lion fight Peter Turbo. I reckon he could take him now that Russ is busy. Johnson will be useful for a change. each to their own, brother. But we'll see what will happen. The problem is that I will say that, you know, we kind of have to temper our expectations a little bit. This is inevitably building towards one of the stalemates of Warhammer 40K that we all know and sometimes love, where realistically what we want now is for the traitors, the Iron Warriors, to carve out a little bit of the galaxy for themselves, and they can just defend that, and the traitors can, the Loyalists can continually try and assault it. They get the Iron Warriors win some, they lose some, but ultimately they're probably gonna just very slowly start creeping into the galaxy, and this will be their version of like the Pariah Nexus or something like that, from where Games Workshop can write campaigns or novels in the future. So I don't think that we'll see the Lion, you know, destroy the Infinite Citadel, but a big battle, a big, you know, sword fight and a battlement would be objectively kind of epic. I think that having Perturabo being able to use like long range firepower, it's a bit more interesting, isn't it? Because everyone being a Bladesmaster, it is cool, but I don't know, it's nice to have the diversity in combat. Why the wait after the Fall of Cadia to return? It's a great question. Yeah, we don't know. I suspect that the obvious answer is going to be that now that Abaddon has been successful, then Perturabo is going to be able to utilize the fact that the warp has spilled out into real space, and he's going to be able to use that to summon himself more frequently, just as Abaddon can, and he's going to be able to summon demons more easily, all this sorts of thing. But it's a really good question. I think one way I'd like to see Perturabo utilized would be in explaining perhaps how Abaddon has some of the knowledge that he has. So one thing that I think gets often forgotten is that the knowledge Abaddon has about the war in heaven, especially prior to him meeting Vashdor, he shouldn't really have. Like, no one should know this. No one should have this in-depth knowledge of how the war in heaven really worked and how the Necron pylons were actually kind of helping the Imperium, and the fact that Abaddon uncovered this information and was able to weaponize it against the Imperium of Man, ultimately destroying Cadia and therefore allowing the Great Rift to spill out into the galaxy. Like, I think a solution to that could be Perturabo. Like, I don't want everything to come from the Chaos Gods. So the idea that Perturabo actually uncovered this information on some campaign and he fed it to Abaddon through some back channels so that Abaddon would work to this goal, which is what Perturabo wanted all along. You could do things like this, where you can have Perturabo be the mastermind that we want him to be, and we don't need him to be the War Master, but if anything, he might be more impressive as a character, as he's the man behind the man. You know, he's actually the real brains of the traitor forces. And you know, Abaddon's going to have to constantly be cautious of that as to whether, because, you know, Abaddon's, as I mentioned earlier, in the Saturnine book, Abaddon gets played by Perturabo, basically. He thinks that it's like a great, you know, position of honor, and he wants to lead the Justerian into the Saturnine Gambit. But actually, Perturabo wanted Abaddon to lead it because he knew it might not go well. He knew there's a strong chance Rogue Dawn would see this coming, which he did. So it's, I think that having Abaddon looking over his shoulder as to whether he can really trust Perturabo is a good use of the character. Sean, thank you so much. What role will Korax play in the Scouring of 40k? With little lore, how might GW use him? What story arc would you like, since he's missing in Ashes? Yeah, I'm really excited. It's a great point. I'm really excited for his role in the Scouring, because, exactly as you mentioned, his absence from Ashes of the Imperium is very notable. So he's in Ashes of the Imperium, the first book of the Scouring, he is the only loyalist Primarch not there. Right, and he should be there, because we know that previously he was with Lionel Johnson and Leman Russ, who arrived together without the Raven Guard fleet, or the core part of the fleet. And so they're working on something big here. And we know that eventually Corvus Korax will, of course, run off into the Eye of Terror. But we don't know exactly what he's going to do in the meantime, and there's still a lot they could do. So in terms of what I'd like him to get some big wins. I think that the Raven Guard are still going to be a very, very small legion. So they're not going to be too much of a decisive legion in terms of winning battles very, very quickly. But I do think that there's, you know, the clandestine activities of Corvus Korax are always going to be amazing. So in the book Korax, we get to see him fighting Night Lords when they're outnumbered, but he's of course basically invisible to them, so he's just tearing them up. And I think that seeing him behind the lines, and given that the main problem the loyalists have in the Scouring right now is the fact that they don't know what the traitors are doing, he can get all this information, he can find it out, and I think that would be really exciting. But ultimately he's gonna go on this journey where he's going to, yeah, his fight against Lorgar is cool for us, but it's not really narratively the most important thing. The thing that's most important about Corvus Korax going forward is that he's going to learn the kind of things that we know as readers, which is about what are the Primarchs and what kind of powers do they really have. And in terms of what I'd like Games Workshop to do with him in the long run, I want Corvus Korax to be the force multiplier of the entire Loyalist faction. Because once he returns to Warhammer 40k, he is going to have this understanding of the Primarchs ultimately having this kind of core of warp stuff, and the fact that you can utilize that warp stuff to, basically become the most powerful psychers in the setting. So just as the Lion has his Forest Walk ability, all of the Primarchs should have stuff like this. And Corvus Korax's return could change everything, because he's going to make everyone else better in that respect and more interesting. And I don't think we want everybody just being a hack and slasher, right? We want Primarchs that have monumental kind of, you know, mythic god type abilities that have, they have the limitations, but yeah, we want some variance there. And especially because in Warhammer 40k, we love our symbolism. We want to see an Odin type, you know, Russ, and we want to see a dragon riding Vulcan and all this kind of awesome stuff that would just be just elevate the setting. So I'm all for that, and I think Corvus Korax is probably the key, really. Finn, thank you so much, member for 20 months. Honestly, going through some dark times, but this channel is a light brighter than Ashnomica. Thank you so much, brother. That means so much. I mean, I had a really difficult start to the year as well. So I totally understand that. And I was off for about a month. So thank you so much to everybody who does support the channel. It really does mean so much. And I'm so excited I get to do this. I love that I get to just talk about Perturabo, which is just so fun. It was a real pleasure. I was a bit short for time because I intended to talk about the Alpha Legion book today. And then yesterday they announced that Perturabo was coming back. And I was like, well, I can't not talk about Perturabo. So I've actually been intending to talk about this Alpha Legion book for a while. But Games Workshop keep releasing kind of new and exciting lore, which I mean, I wanted to strike while the Lord of Iron was hot, if you'll pardon the pun there. So I had to do it. But it's a pleasure to, like, quickly being like, what happens in this conversation with Hanzhou again? How does that go down? And running over things. So it's the coolest thing. It's so fun. If Rogue Dawn returns, I hope he either becomes the Black Templar Primarch or he has the Emperor's Power Claw as his prosthetics. Yeah, both fine theories, I think, in some respect. So I think that it sounds very controversial to say that Rogue Dawn might align with the Black Templars. I totally get that. And in particular, the fact that he's, of course, you know, old school Imperium of Man. He's very harsh to Sigismund when Sigismund doesn't. He follows what Euphrates Keeler says, and he ultimately doesn't join the Retribution Fleet. Despite all this happening, I actually could see a Rogue Dawn kind of ultimately being more aligned with the Black Templars than you might suspect. And there's two reasons for that. One, Rogue Dawn goes through a lot, and his conversations with Sigismund at the end of the siege are, of course, much calmer, and he seemingly comes to accept what Sigismund has sort of become. So we'll see if they backtrack on that a little bit in the scouring, but there's definitely some option there. But also, the concept of the Emperor being viewed as a god is one of those things that in the novels so far with the Lion and Gilliman, it's not been as combative as you might expect. So they are both still very clear that they don't believe the Emperor is a god. But a lot of this kind of objectively, and even as fans, we sort of do this, it's coming down to your definition of things. So the idea that people view the Emperor as a god is one of those things where it's like, we know that the Emperor didn't view himself as a god, and that's typically the official stance. And I think that by most people's definition of what a god is in, like, modern Terran times, M21, sorry, then at the end of the day, you know, we probably wouldn't view the Emperor as a god. But in 40K, it's this viewpoint of, like, if he looks like a god, acts like a god, talks like a god, is he just a god? And the idea that the Rogue Dawn is going to be infuriated with the idea that some of his sons worship the Emperor as a god, I don't see it happening. And the greatest evidence, I would say, for that is Maecenas from the Dawn of Fire series. So Maecenas is a key character in the Dawn of Fire series, which is like a central 40K series. And he is of the White Consoles chapter, also in the Lords of Silence book. Very good book. And the White Consoles are an Ultramarine successor chapter who believe the Emperor is a god. And when, even though they believe he's a god, they're not as fanatically as the Black Templars. But of course, they're sons of Gilliman. So Gilliman asks Maecenas about this. You know, what's the deal? What's up? Why? I said the Emperor's not a god. Why are you doing this? Why do you believe he's a god? And Maecenas gives this kind of response of, like, well, I mean, to us, it's sort of semantics. M3, sorry. I've got my time. Yes, it's M3. I'll tell a lie. I'm streaming to you guys from thousands of years in the future. When Gilliman speaks to Maecenas, Maecenas says, you know, well, at the end of the day, he kind of, to us, he looks like a god and acts like a god. So we kind of just treat him as a god, and we're not, like, religious zealots about it, but we do think of him as a god. And Gilliman, he's one of Gilliman's favored sons. You know, Gilliman gives him a relic power fist, and Gilliman gives him a lot of respect. So I actually think that you know, the idea that it'd be impossible to work a Rogue Dawn into aligning more with the Black Templars, not impossible. I mean, the Imperial Fist will always be his core boys, but perhaps you'll see more allying there. I don't know. Top five 1v1 Primarchs for the Great Crusade. Great question. Top five 1v1 Primarchs in the Great Crusade. Sanguinius is pretty much always going to come at number one for most people. I think the Lion is definitely going to be up there. I think I would go Russ and Angron. And then fifth. Yeah, it's tough. There's lots of Primarchs you can make the case for, definitely. Horus, the Khan, even Conrad Kurz, Fulgrim. All excellent choices. I think I would probably, if I was making a video on it, I'd probably want to say Conrad Kurz for fun, because it would be fun to justify Conrad Kurz. But he is actually he's a much better fighter than you might expect. And especially before all the demon nonsense comes in, he is incredibly good. The Lion would ultimately, utilize his Primarch abilities to beat him. But Outside of that, Conor Akers is very difficult to beat, and even Sanguinius, despite the fact Sanguinius was in his dressing gown at the time, couldn't find and kill, you know, Conor Akers. So it was, I'd probably go Akers. You forgot Magnus who wins. Oh, that's true. I mean, yes, if you're willing to utilize proper warp stuff, then Magnus all day. Fair enough, yeah. So many Perturabo simps. It's cool that he's coming back, but the guy failed. He failed his father. He failed humanity. He failed his sister. And most importantly, he failed himself. Oh, I'm going to guess you're an Imperial Fist fan, but fair enough. I mean, so I guess it depends on your failure. So I think my greatest example of a Perturabo failure, which I think just sucks, I hated that it happened, is in the Siege of Terror. So, oh God, I'm trying to remember which book now. So in the book, The Last Wall, I think it is. If that's wrong, chat, correct me. But in the book, The Last Wall, there's a fight over the siege port. And at the end of the book, Perturabo and Rogel Dorn come face-to-face, near enough, right? They're pretty much face-to-face. And at that point, Rogel Dorn is trying to, encourage Perturabo to fight him, you know, man-to-man. Let's do this here and now. And Perturabo says no. He says no. He says, I'm not going to fight you. Because he says, you know, what I'm going to do, Dorn, I'm going to orchestrate this siege. So I tear down your fortress. I'm going to kill every single one of your sons and all of your brothers. And I'm going to kill your father in front of you. And then I'll kill you. And not long after that, he would leave. And I'm like, oh, you took a big game to then leave the Siege of Terror. And maybe the Iron Cage can kind of bring some of that back. But that was, you know, it's like anything. It's the same with Leman Russ, right? Leman Russ does, you know, this huge speech. And, you know, when he talks to the lion, he says, you know, I'll rip your throat out. If it comes to it, I'll rip your throat out. If you ever threaten my sons again, I'll rip your throat out. And when they actually fight, the lion just disarms him in seconds. it's nothing. So it's just kind of like, I mean, it's if you do one of those speeches, you kind of have to deliver. It would be another equivalent would be Jagatai Khan and Fulgrim, right? You want Jagatai Khan, at least pre-demon Fulgrim. You would want Jagatai Khan to kind of kick his ass very quickly, or else the Khan looks a bit silly, because the Khan's speech to Fulgrim in Scars is very much like, if we were to ever fight, it would barely be a fight. I would ruin you. So to then see Jagatai Khan not kick Fulgrim's ass would not land very hard. But in terms of him failing generally, it kind of depends what you mean. I think most people are pretty accepting of Perturabo's failing as it is, because he was really up against it in the Siege of Terror. So all of the demon Primarchs, when they become demon Primarchs, they're very powerful, but they become the worst teammates you can possibly get. And Horus, of course, increasingly, at least he appears mad, and he starts, you know, focusing on fighting the Emperor in the warp. So it's all a bit of a challenge for Bertie. He's carrying a lot of weight himself. During the Horus Heresy, what happened? Fulgrim tried to sacrifice him to gain more power, and he gets poisoned. Basically, he has to fly into a black hole, and in addition to that, he has to go and capture Angron. So he's kind of, you know, he's really up against it a lot of the time. So I think people have a lot of sympathy for Perturabo's journey. I'll tell you what is actually, now that I mentioned it, something that I would like to see dived into a little bit. There's a book called Talon, which is in the latter half of the Heresy. And it's technically an anthology, but it is made up primarily of like one story. And in this story, this Perturabo makes a play to become perhaps a demon Primarch. So it is said that there are three gateways to chaos in Warhammer 40K. One is on the planet of Molech. One is on the planet of Talarn, and the other we don't know about. And we don't really know what Perturabo planned to do, because it doesn't. The story gets stopped before it goes there. But Perturabo was making a play for this gateway to chaos. And so when he does this, ultimately he'll get recalled by Horus, so he's not able to complete it. But for a character who most of us assume at the time is very anti-chaos and doesn't want anything to do with becoming a demon or anything like that because he's just seen Fulgrim ascend. This is a very interesting play. So I don't know if, chat, whether you have any theories as to what Perturabo was seeking there, but it is interesting because most of the time I see, you know, people saying like Perturabo never sought demonhood, he never wanted anything to do with chaos. I do think, except for that one book in Talon is the only exception. So yeah, it's a really, really weird one. And it's also, we never really explore that lore of this gateway to chaos again in the setting. So it's just, it's one of those little tidbits of lore that they sprinkle in, and it's a big deal in the Heresy, but yeah, then it never really gets picked up on. So I hope they do something with that. That would be cool. Have Perturabo go back to Talon. That would be awesome. I don't think it's that far, actually. My favorite meme in this world is Nurgle shaking Asmongold's hand and automatically washing his at the words, "Even Nurgle don't want his funk." Fair enough, fair enough. Maybe, I appreciate that, chat. Maybe by mentioning Asmongold's name, this will get suggested on one of his streams or something. I think if I, hey, buddy, I'd then love to see a clash of ideals between Purty and Dawn, faith versus raw logic, with Dawn vexed by Purty at his change initially, discarding pure logic for faith with pragmatism. Fair. I mean, I think what I would quite like to see is a very confusing ascendancy, right? So I would like to see Perturabo, you know, from what we can see in the scouring, Perturabo is doing, he's making the same mistake everybody makes. He thinks he can use chaos to his own effect. And ultimately, everybody fails when they think this. So Perturabo thinks he can kind of utilize the forces of chaos. He comes up with a very, I don't think he'll necessarily seek ascendancy so much as conduct a very, you know, big experiment using like Imperial Fist gene seed and warp magic and all this kind of crazy technology. And I would like to see that. I'd like it to be left up to the reader to decide whether Perturabo succeeded or not, because he's going to ascend to become a demon prince. But the question is that what he actually wanted, or has this backfired and the chaos gods have now asserted control over him where previously they hadn't? But I mean, he sort of operates on a whim, and clearly he can make moves against Nurgle, or, you know, servants of Nurgle, and yeah, he's still rocking on as no problems. But at the end of the day, I think it would be, I'd like to see him try and conduct some sort of big experiment, and maybe it backfires, maybe it doesn't, but that would be cool, because I like this lore of him attempting to forge himself into the perfect weapon. I think it slaps, to be honest with you. Papa, thank you so much for super chat. Perturabo required reading Angel Exterminatus, Slaves to Darkness, pretty much the entire Siege, Ashes of the Imperium. I would only add Talon to that list. And his Primarch novel is pretty good. And yeah, I guess it's sort of, if you want to read, I guess his Primarch novel is the book to read if you're like, if you hate Perturabo, that's probably the book you'd read. That is the book where he commits the purge on Olympia. So understandable, that's where people kind of are like, wow, this guy that kills his brother, his sister, sorry, I don't think he's a nice guy. Fun fact, Undivided included any power of chaos that are not the big four. It is the four together and every other minor power of chaos that exists, though Vashdor does count as Undivided technically. That's interesting. I guess you could make that argument, but I think typically when we say Demon Prince of Chaos and Divided, we just think of the big four, because Bellator is the original Demon Prince of Chaos and Divided, and his kind of betrayal of the old four is what caused him to be cast down. But yeah, I could see that being a thing. I guess I have no issue against that. Mr. Saladin, just finished the Beckwin and the Boy series. Any suggestions on another good book series to do next? Should I get into Purty books? Looking for big setting relevance like Beckwin. Yeah, assuming that's just what you've read so far, yeah, I guess it's sort of up to you. So it's interesting when to answer that question. So when you say like big setting relevance, it depends on what you want to do, because For example, the biggest story in Warhammer 40K will always be the resurrection of the Emperor of Mankind. That is, if that's the endgame scenario. Malkador pretty much says it as such. The idea is that we want the Emperor's soul to be made whole again and allow him to leave the Golden Throne. That's the long run. And for books to that effect, you want to read Throne of Light, which is book 4 of the Dawn of Fire series. You can pretty much just read it as its own thing, assuming you know what Gilliman and the Indomitus Crusade is. If you don't, just read the first one, Avenging Sun. And then the Siege of Terror is the other thing that will explain most of what has happened to the Emperor. So those books are the big kind of like high level ones. And then you can kind of go down from that. So like the fixing of the Golden Throne is a huge deal. So Vaults of Terror is the name of the series, which is by Chris Raitt, which is very, very good. And if you're going to read that, you can also read his Regent Shadow and Watchers of the Throne series. So that's those books take place at kind of the same time. It's just before Cadia falls to kind of just after Gilliman returns. So it's all set around that same time period, which is pretty exciting. And that gives you a lot of insight into what's happening with the Golden Throne. The custodians being in 40K is like a very new thing. So the reveal that the custodians are now fighting again, the reveal of the Primaris Marines, and various conspiracies going on with the High Lords of Terror. So yeah, those are probably the big ones that I would say. So if you down from that, it kind of just down from there, it depends on the characters that you like, I guess. So yeah, reading Purty's books is a good way to go as well, because he will be a big character in the future, and it will be it'll be nice to have that relevance. So like, for example, if the Lion and Perturabo do fight, if you haven't read Fallen Angels, you'll still enjoy it, you'll still have a good time, but it will be nice to have read that conversation. I hope they don't bring back Dawn. We don't need a rehash of their 30K dynamic. Yeah, I totally respect that. I'm not saying that's an absolute rule, but I don't want that to be the setting. I'm with you. I think that the setting is better if it is a change to what happened in 30K, or a development for those characters, because at the end of the day, we've all seen Perturabo and Rogue Dawn kind of hurling insults at one another, and given that neither of them can actually die, how far can this go? And I guess the Scouring will give us a victor, as it were, which is Perturabo, sorry. But at the end of the day, it will be, do we just want to see the Heresy repeated? Likewise, I probably don't want to see Dawn on Terra. I probably want to, when Dawn does return, I wouldn't mind him being near Perturabo, because it would be switching the dynamic. Now, Rogue Dawn would be the besieger, and the Perturabo would be defending his little empire. And so, that would be a good switch. Likewise, Gilliman is on Terra now instead of being in the Unremembered Empire. The Lion is no longer seeking to become War Master. I'd want Leman Russ to be much more like a humble, not necessarily, he's always relatively humble internally, but a much more kind of a softer Primarch. So all these sorts of like changes that are interesting for the character. He's rather overblown in his military expertise. He uses Zap Brannigan logic with his own sons and people, throws as many at the murder bots till they shut down. He exhausted his tithing from it. He throws as many of the murder bots till they shut down. Still talking about Perturabo, I see. Perturabo, I don't think that's fair. I think that, Rogue Dawn is hyped in the Siege of Terror, and people very much do mention that without Rogue Dawn, things probably would have gone very badly. But the reverse does also happen, where people are like, wow, without Perturabo, we'd have been largely screwed. And as good as some of the Space Marine leaders are, they don't have the mind of a Primarch. And so Perturabo is a big deal. OMG, Dawn comes back as a Dreadnought, a heretic Dread. That would be cool. I think people would actually go for that, because it would be an incredible model, firstly, let's just be honest. But also, like, Rogue Dawn has gone through so much towards the end of the Siege of Terror, with him being kind of entrapped by Khorne, to the Iron Cage incident, and of course, ultimately, kind of, quote-unquote sacrificing himself, as far as we know, to the Black Legion, or at least Tracer Space Marines, depending on if they rewrite it. And Yeah, I think seeing him in a really bad spot would be pretty cool. And it, yeah, again, just more variance amongst the Primarchs is going to be very useful. So I think it would make sense. Are there any future collaborations with any lore tubers beside Alex on the horizon? So I did a podcast the other day with the Lore Crimes guys, the Amber King from Lore Crimes. And so that was on Fallen Angels. So I'm going on for their Dark Angel stuff, as you might imagine, which actually I haven't got another book for a while now with them. So I don't know if I'll do anything else with them. But yes, there's not too many people that have read The Siege. So I'll probably do some other stuff, I think, with them if they continue working through the Siege books. But in terms of other stuff, no, nothing really on the horizon, I don't think. Yeah, I think I've got a lot of stuff on. I'm always up for a podcast and things like that, and I'm always happy to have people on. It's something that slips your mind. I do really like doing the collabs; they are a lot of fun, and YouTube's actually made it, I think, a little bit easier to do kind of collab features and that sort of thing. So that's always fun. But I'll be honest, nothing on the horizon. If there is anybody, feel free to put it in chat and I'll make a note of it. There's a few things I'm trying to finish off right now, but I don't know. I think a lot of people as well don't really do collab so much, especially because I do things live, and a lot of people don't really like doing stuff live because, of course, they like to prep their stuff, which is perfectly reasonable. So it's, it depends on the type. I think also that having people do voices for stuff is very useful. So yeah, I need to lean on people more for that kind of thing, actually. Off topic, but do we know if Valdor Spear... Oh, I think it's actually the first King in Yellow mention. Well, actually, we had the Beckwin book. Do we know if Valdor Spear tells the future or just a future? Loving the streams, brother. Keep going. Thanks so much. As far as I'm aware, there's no lore around it saying that this is just a possible future, or it could be misinformation. It just says it reveals truths to the wielder about the person who struck. So for, most commonly it's revealing to Valdor names of demons that he kills. But yes, when he gets the vision of the future, when he strikes Abaddon, that is more of an exception than what usually happens. Normally what happens is he finds out things about like their motives and what they're doing. And so it is there's even a suggestion that the spear was given to Valdor to temper him. Almost he's too good at killing. I think that is actually a suggestion in Valdor Birth of the Imperium. The Emperor was like, you're too good at killing people, so we're going to give you this spear to temper your abilities. And that's basically what it does. But yeah, the vision he gets from Abaddon, that doesn't happen every time in the books. It's a big deal. Maybe the whole I hate chaos thing was him being petulant at Horus recalling him when he was actually trying to trying for demonhood. I didn't want to be a demon anyway. Yeah, it could be something like that. It could be an act. I think to be fair, maybe you could do something around, I guess an obvious answer is him like gathering intel. You know, he's still gathering information. He's still trying to learn what is chaos, what is the warp, how does it work? And he was able to fly into a singularity and somehow survive that. So it's a bit nuts. I actually should do a stream just talking about that black hole, because it's a relatively small part of the siege, but the heresy, but it's pretty nuts. He has great development. His teachings to Honzau are cool. His iron cooling, which will make him more formidable, throw suns harder at killbots. Yes, he is cool. I mean, his conversation with Honzau is interesting, because when Perturabo speaks to Honzau Halfbreed, he encourages Honzau. He just encourages Honzau, really, I think, is the first thing to mention. So he says to Honzau, like, you should fight me. They're playing a game. Perturabo likes war games. And they actually play like a game that involves like a metaphor for the Fall of Cadia. And he says that he wants Honzau to fight him as himself, not try and fight him as other Iron Warriors warsmiths would fight him, or something like that. And behind all of this is the threat that there's like a Damocles sword here, that if Perturabo deems Honzau not worthy, he will kill Honzau. So it's not all sunshine and rainbows. But yeah, he is surprisingly encouraging in that passage, and he says you can do it, like, and then when Hanzhao is successful in a part, he's like, ah, see, I told you it could be done. And you're like, you do watch this, you're like, it's surprisingly chill for a demon Primarch Perturabo, but maybe 10,000 years has allowed him to chill out. I mean, maybe, to be fair, it's just like the Iron Cage is the victory that he needed, and he's proved himself to himself that he's the better strategist compared to Dorn. Because if you're not familiar, Dorn and Perturabo used to play a lot of strategic games, and when they did so, Dorn would usually win. And they used to play basically Warhammer. And there's even a bit where Perturabo like slaps a table and it says like models fall off the table like a miniature war game. It's like a really funny simile. And so, yeah, Perturabo used to always lose. But Perturabo kind of has this ability to always get better. So he kind of like starts off, I guess, less intelligent than Dorn, or less not as good as Dorn. But he always improves, and he gets better and better and better, to the degree that I would probably say by the time we get to 40k, he might be better than Rogue Dorn. I'm not saying they'd ever write a loyalist death, but I would probably like to see Perturabo getting some love there. But Perturabo is a fascinating character because of he's one of the characters where, although he does genuinely seem to be loyal to the Emperor of Mankind and genuinely sort of believe in those ideals, he also was able to see the Eye of Terror pretty much from birth. And his kind of Primarch gift is that he always, he naturally had understandings of technology. And so he could just kind of build stuff without reading things, and he just knew things that he shouldn't do. So Perturabo's interactions with Perturabo's seeking of knowledge is quite unique in that respect. Dorn gives advice for Perturabo for rest and recover, and makes him win the last game before he leaves for the Great Crusade. Yes, that's right, isn't it? He wins the final one. Do you think Alpharius Omegon will come back? Great question. I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm pretty confident in saying that the current plan is not to bring them back. So this was a question that was asked to Black Library some time ago, and they said that this was a few years ago, to be fair, but they said that their current methodology is that they treat Alpharius and Omegon as dead. They're both dead. That doesn't mean that can never change, and a new management, a new writer, a new plot device might well change that, but currently that's how we see them. However, in terms of, I can be pretty confident to say that Alpharius dies in Praetorian of Dawn. Be pretty confident about that. So I talked about this with Josh when I had him on the channel. And we were talking about this idea that when Ferris Manus dies and when Alpharius dies, they both kind of explode. It's like a thing that seems to happen when Primarchs die. There's like a big burst of light. And then the book pans over to Omegon, and Omegon has the realization, I am alone. And so that very much seems pretty conclusive that Alpharius is dead. As to whether Omegon dies, however, or Alpharius Omegon, depending on how you define it, we don't know. I guess that book hasn't officially been written, and it would be very easy to write that book that as a question mark. You know, if you had a passage, like, for example, the way 40k authors would typically do this is earlier into the book, before Omegon fights Skilliman, they would have a scene where Omegon is in a control room and he's messing around with some teleporter technology, and or they would have it where he's discussing the concept of switching with one of his sons, and could any of his sons actually fight against Gilliman? And they don't officially say that's what happened, but it leaves it open for the reader to interpret it that way. As to whether there's also the aspect of do they want to give an official answer in the novels? Because maybe Black Library shouldn't have said that when they said that they treat them as dead. Because, for example, in the book Sons of the Hydra, there is a plot line around Omegon. He isn't, but there's a suggestion. Maybe Omegon's alive. And so, they always want to have a little bit there for Alpha Legion fans to chase. And that's, I guess part of the setting, really, isn't it? So I don't think so. And I think it would maybe undermine some things, because the fact that all of the Primarchs are now demons on the traitor side that are alive is important, because that means that none of them are really a challenge for Abaddon, because Abaddon's position of War Master is kind of dependent upon his person being based in reality, and the demon Primarchs are not. They're of course now a part of the Chaos Gods, basically. How undivided demon Primarchs work, I don't really know. But the other ones are part of the Chaos Gods, just like any demon prince. So the fact that you'd have Alpharius back as a non-demon traitor Primarch would immediately bring him into potential friction with Abaddon. And that is the big narrative. The big narrative is Abaddon versus the Emperor in the long run. If we were to ever have an End Times, you know, we can be pretty confident that that's what they would do. So, I don't think so. However, like I say, things can definitely change. I think the twins are dead. I was a believer in real Alpharius being alive after Praetorian and Omegon died. It's even sadder because Alfie actually was mad Dawn wouldn't listen to him during the fight. Yeah, I can understand that. But, I mean, if Alpharius really is mad about that, really was, and he does seemingly try to have a conversation with Dawn at the end, there were way easier ways to have that conversation. You know, he didn't have to, like, Praetorian of Dawn, if you haven't read that book, is a lot of Alpha Legion shenanigans that kind of go nowhere. And yeah, he could have just sent an email. After everything Dawn has been through and him and Perturabo switching roles, not only will be refreshing, but it feels natural. I think Dawn makes a better Templar than an Imperial Fist. Well, the other aspect of Dawn that I really like, and I spoke about this in the Leetu video, is the idea that I like that Rogue Dawn might not be religious, he might not believe the Emperor is a god, but at the end of the day, he's come to understand the Tarot. The Tarot are quite an important part of, like, the Imperial cult, like, in the novels. They come up quite often. And so the idea that Rogue Dawn sort of leans heavily into that aspect is interesting. Like, that is quite interesting. So, yeah, he sort of got a communication line with his dad, and that could change his character entirely. If there are non-Demon Prince traitor Primarchs, a nice opponent for them would be Bellicor. As the Spirit of Chaos, he'd be ideal to go against the traitor that spurned Chaos. Perhaps, yeah, you could do something like that. I don't know if that's... Bellicor, I always think of as just for his own self-interest, though, isn't he, at the end of the day? So I don't know if he would care about that. Like, I really like the Bellicor Vashtor showdown in Arcs of Omen, because yeah, it's classic, right? I mean, if Vashtor's trying to achieve godhood, then Bellicor's got something to say. Hey Sam, man, hey chat, hope everyone's having a good day. Thanks so much. Thanks for joining me. Yes, like and subscribe if you haven't. Thank you so much, people that mentioned that. We need fan art of Sanguinius in some kind of pink dressing gown, hair rollers, and holding a slipper ready for a beatdown of his match versus Kaz. Yes, I mean, maybe someone has done it. Occasionally someone makes that kind of artwork. Sanguinius versus Kaz. No, I don't. No, there's nothing showing. But yes, that's, if you're not familiar, this is from the book Pharos, where the lion's away and Conrad Kurz makes it into the throne room, and Sanguinius is not dressed for a confrontation. But they can both sort of see into the future, so they can't... It sort of implies they can't really kill each other in that respect. The Demon Primarchs were pretty much a clown show, planning-wise. Yes, very true. Khan is in the webway, basically fighting Dark Elves. You could do, but to what end? You know, that's the problem with that sort of... thing, I guess, is the only thing I can think of. Like, to what end do you want Chagatai Khan just in the webway, you know, like fighting Jukari? Because, like, I feel like I'd expect more from him. You know, he's the Khan. He's one of the smartest Primarchs, and I'd like to think he was playing a long game of something. But yeah, I guess as far as we know, that's what he's doing. I wonder what Purty's ability would have been if he didn't turn to Chaos, like how the Lion has Forest Walk and Corvus has Emo Form. Yeah, I mean, So he does have his ability to kind of see the Eye of Terror at all times, which is pretty ominous. And he has this ability to sort of understand technology very, very well. And he does, he's one of like the fastest learners out of all the Primarchs. But he is definitely incredibly technically gifted. But for example, there's a bit where he seemingly implies he sort of looks up to Vulcan a little bit, and Vulcan's perhaps a bit better than him, and Vulcan makes for him like a toy. It's like a perpetual motion engine, little toy thing, and he treasures that. So, yeah, I guess that would be an interesting relationship in the future. Have we had any lore on Bellicor reacting to Perturabo or Lorgar being undivided demon princes? Can't remember if Bellicor being the first and only was purely old world AOS lore. Good question. Yeah, so nothing as far as I know. I've never read anything about that. It is supposed to be the same character for both. So in Total War 3, they lead much more heavily into that lore. But I would assume it still applies for 40k. I wouldn't assume it's a different character at all. Ricardo, hey bud. Malkador says that if Dorne tried to learn about the warp, he'd go mad. Dorne was made to master three dimensions, not the numberless of the warp, but tarot equals tool to learn without interacting directly. Interesting. Yeah, I guess maybe that's a good way to explain it. But I mean, he's gonna have to learn about the warp a bit. Like he's up against Demon Purty, right? Angry Moaning Purty was so on point on the way to the siege. as we saw in the passage earlier, he's basically been pretty consistently disrespected. He hated how bad his demon brothers had gotten, definitely. Dorne is going to come back so strong and angry that he would whoop Turbo Peter with one hand tied behind his wait a sec. nice. Yes. You know what? It's funny because normally most of the heresy you think, oh man, Perturabo needs an easier time, right? And then the Great Crusade. But if the Iron Cage is just brutal, then maybe Dorne will be deserving of a win. But I think it's kind of fair because Dorne is one of the few Primarchs I think that he makes very few genuine mistakes in the Siege of Terror and the Horus Heresy, so he kind of crushes it. Whereas pretty much every other Loyalist Primarch makes some pretty big errors or misses some pretty big things that you wouldn't expect them to. I guess if Lorgar is totally devoted to the gods, I can see him being an undivided prince. But I hope Perturabo is either unaligned to Vashdor or something different and new. I think you'll definitely get something different and new. We can be pretty confident he is a demon Prince of Chaos and Divided, because it says he uses the gifts of Nurgle, for example. But I think that he's something new in the sense that he's tried to forge himself into a weapon and was either successful or maybe not successful in that endeavor. So I think most people will be satisfied with that. And I think it's one of those things, a lot of this stuff gets believed very widely that like Perturabo isn't going to become a demon Primarch because, a bunch of YouTubers make that video and then it gets spread, just spread. But the truth is it's actually been pretty consistent. I think in like every Chaos Space Marine Codex that I've ever checked, it says demon Primarch Perturabo. How is the World Eaters still around given their combat doctrine and their Primarch not being much of one? Yeah, it definitely a challenge. And of course, Khan the Betrayer, of course, it's been a disaster for them at various times. So yes, you are right. They are regularly attacking one another. Exactly how they haven't gone extinct entirely, we don't really know the full details of it. There are people who have been recruited into the World Eaters in the novels, but it's obviously, they're obviously generally focused on killing, maiming, burning. So it's definitely something you have to kind of suspend your belief for. There's more lore to it now, I guess. Lorgar being Bellicor's mirror works for me, but Purty works better if it's the undivided, as in a minor aspect of Chaos, instead of the big four together, because Purty doesn't fit the four. I guess, to be fair, we haven't had too much lore on him, so maybe he'll fit the four more in the future. And, for example, Like, I can understand feeling like that now, but maybe during the scouring, we'll see Perturabo's ascendancy and we'll see the Chaos Gods directly intervening or manipulating things to ensure Perturabo's ascendancy. And at that point, it will feel more natural. But right now, I understand where you're coming from. Never quite got the Codex limitations. Makes total sense in a world without Primarchs, but it was written in a world with the Primarchs, and in the end, each Primarch still controls every chapter. I get where you're coming from. I guess, the chapters are supposed to be able to be independent, although, yeah, they're pretty much biologically and the programs to basically follow their Primarch. So it is, I get where you're coming from. But even Gilliman, to be fair, largely thinks of these things as a bit of a mistake now, so it kind of makes sense. And ironically, of course, the title of Warmaster is used with some consistency through the history of the Imperium. Do you think we'll see Perturabo invent any new demon engines? You know, it's funny, now you mention that, I feel like I haven't actually spoken about the new Defiler model. Oh, it's so good. I don't know if you guys have seen this. One second. Yes, I should get this in the stream because it's fine. If you have not seen this model, this is the new Defiler model. The game, you know, Perturabo has been cooking, I guess. But it is really quite something. If you're not familiar with the old Defiler model, it is, you know, it's a classic. It's a big walking crab. People love it, and I'm sure a lot of people will prefer it to this one for nostalgia's sake. But I got to tell you, this is stunning. I'm so happy. I can't wait to get this. I don't actually know when it's out, but it might be out already, to be fair. But yeah, I fucking love that. So yeah, I do think you'll probably get some sort of new demon engine model. People have always really enjoyed them. It always gives, the nice thing about modern Space Marines or Space Marines in the modern tabletop is that there is a very clear distinction now between Space Marines and Chaos Space Marines, instead of just being a bit spikier, because of course this Chaos Space Marines lean very heavily on tech and weaponry and vehicles from the Heresy and styles from the Heresy, and in addition to that, they've got all this demon nonsense going on, whereas the modern day Space Marines have Primaris stuff. So there's a really big difference between the two, which is pretty cool. So yes, I'm very hopeful we get more demon engines in the future. And if both Perturabo and Vashtor have been working on demon engines over 10,000 years, I mean, we need some more, GW. We need some more. And ultimately, we need more levels in Space Marine 2 where, you know, Dreadnoughts chuck shit at them. That was, let's face it, it was awesome. Question for you. Where do you draw the line between liking you because most similar to me type of POV or genuine friendship because the lion considered Kurz his closest brother? I guess it's sort of, I don't really mind either, to be honest with you. In terms of the Primarchs hating each other, a lot of their original differences come from very minor or kind of childish things, right? Like, in the context of the Great Crusade, they might seem big, but the Primarchs' issues with one another are often a demonstration of their kind of childishness, and the fact that a core aspect of Warhammer 40K is that the Emperor took a bunch of, you know, almost adolescent type figures and gave them the most powerful armies in the galaxy. So I don't really mind too much either way. I do think, like, I have a soft spot for, like, Magnus and Perturabo's relationship because, it's kind of dived into it a little bit more. And I think that, the Primarchs coming to each other's aid is always going to be a really interesting thing. But to be honest, so many of the Primarchs just hate each other. I think that seeing traitors get along will be just a good change of pace. I remember a scene that Russ, before setting out to take on Horus, he meets the Khan coming into Terra. So they met and talked as the Khan left the Wolves in an attack with the Alpha Legion. Yes, well, the Wolves and the White Scars are wary of each other early into the Heresy, but everybody is wary of the Scars, to be fair. With what we have on Dawn's disappearance, what do you think the likelihood is of him having either been captured or tortured or trapped by Khorne again? I would hope it's zero, because I don't think things should be, plot points should just be copied and pasted from 30k to 40k. But as to whether Dawn's been captured, I think maybe Russ has been captured. If I had to choose one, I would choose Russ, because the Thousand Suns kind of imply that's what's happened, or I interpret that from what they say. But more generally, in terms of Dawn, I don't know. I kind of like the tarot aspect is a subtle one, but it could be really impactful. If Dawn genuinely has come to believe in the tarot and understand it, it would allow him to be operating on the advice of the Emperor, at least to some degree, over the last 10,000 years, which would explain, for example, why Dawn sticks with his sons for however many centuries he's going to stick with them for, and then decide to leave, because just one day, Rogue with Dawn in his chamber, you know, he pulls a tarot card reading, and all of a sudden, you know, he pulls the Dark King, and that freaks him out, and he realizes that the Emperor, the Emperor's going to be in danger, and so all of a sudden he's wants to go off on his own for whatever reason. Yeah, I'm just speculating, but something like that would make sense, I think. So we'll see. I am an Adeptus Sororita player because I love the aesthetic, but also because they are baseline humans who fight on par with Astartes using blind faith and stubbornness. Fair. Yeah, I think that people do always enjoy that aspect of them. I think that they can also fulfill both aspects. I think Space Marines can easily be defeated by Sisters of Battle, like more experienced ones, but at the same time, Sisters of Battle can be killed by even Guardsmen, kind of in theory, depending on how it's written. So, you know, at their core, they're just, you know, very strong humans with power armor. So, yeah, they are definitely beatable. Do you know what we feed more? Where is my orc main character, Sandman? Where are they? 11 editions has orcs in it. Where's my Yorkie's boss's energy? I got more British by the second just thinking about it. Cool question. I need to read the new Gazgul book. I think there's actually another orc book they just announced, didn't they? So, yes, we'll see if there's new orc lore. This Snazdraka? From Armageddon, he's a new orc character with a new model. Yes, I think it's the flash kits that are getting a novel, which will be pretty cool. And you know, yeah, the orcs have actually had more named characters than you might think in the model range. I imagine that quite a few of them are still sold, but yeah, I think that them getting novels will be a big deal. I think the orc books have all done pretty well, so I think that's probably why they're making so many of them, because people buy them. People just really enjoy reading about the orcs, and they are, yeah, they're just fun. You know, like, I think if you ever get burnt out reading 40k, do you want to try to change the pace, try an orc book. You'll have a good time. Imperial Fist and Black Templars at the Cadian Gate, realizing in horror that Perturabo's ancient and has an ancient giant skeleton crucified across his standard. Oh, God. Yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah, that would be nuts it'd be one of those things. I don't think they'd ever do it, because they wouldn't be able to sell Dawn models. But if they just revealed that Dawn had killed, Perturabo had killed Dawn off screen, can you imagine? That would be one of the biggest shakeups in the setting. It would make you question everything. So it might be good in the long run, but I don't think those Imperial Fist fans would be happy. So, Perturabo is back, and he is definitely bigger than ever, and I suspect better than ever. He looks pretty terrifying, and I can't wait to see what they do with this storyline. I'm sure a model is not that far behind, and I am really, really excited for this. So I think this will be a massive campaign going forward, and the Iron Warriors could definitely do with some love in like modern 40k. And I think if you're an Iron Warriors or an Imperial Fists fan, you're probably getting very hyped right now, because an inevitable conflict will come. So let me know in the comments, who do you think will be put opposite Perturabo amongst the loyalist Primarchs? I mean, is a returning Dawn inevitable, or do you think there's maybe a better choice like we talked about today? Would it be better to put Perturabo opposite maybe the Lion or Gilliman? So yeah, that's what I'm hoping for, but I'll be interested to see what you guys think. But thank you so much for watching. I'll see you next time. All right, bye everybody. Take care. Thanks for watching this stream. If you could help me appease YouTube's machine spirit by liking and subscribing, I would greatly appreciate it. If you couldn't make the stream live but want to ask me a question anyway, consider posting it in our community tab and I'll answer it next time. To support the channel, click the join button below, which will give you access to more content, and you can drop into the members' Discord, where all the coolest Terrans hang out, away from the watchful eyes of the Inquisition. Thanks for joining me, and until next time, I wait for you, and I forgive you. Good night.